It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a federal law that bans firearm ownership for those who have a domestic violence restraining order against them.
The 8-1 United States versus Rahimi decision overturns a circuit court ruling that the federal law was unconstitutional.
The case has been watched closely by groups on different sides of firearm regulation debates and by groups that work on domestic violence issues.
Here in Wisconsin, a similar state law remains in effect alongside the federal law, but our next guests say the federal court ruling was still important here in the state.
Monique Minkins is Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Monique, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you.
And Jenna Gormel is Public Policy Director for End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Jenna, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Monique, big picture, how significant is this U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding that federal law? I know you've had your eye on that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big deal. That's the best way I can explain it. It's a big deal. We talk about VAWA and how it was to keep people safe in the streets and in the home. And this is one of those measures that will ensure that happens. It protects people, especially when I think about, or not when I think about, but individuals who have sought a restraining order, have a temporary restraining order, it protects them because that's the police contact with the person, with the harm doer. And so we're really excited. I am kind of tongue-tied, but we were really excited when we saw that, because it is a step, it is a support for victims and survivors that is really important, considering, according to our 2022 homicide report, 88.5% of DV homicides were with a firearm. Mm. And so it is really big.
Jenna, this was a federal court ruling in a different circuit. Wisconsin has a similar law on the books that at least with this ruling was not in danger. Can you talk about the state laws in Wisconsin and how they work when it comes to firearms and domestic violence restraining orders?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as you said, the decision wouldn't have overturned our state laws that prohibit access to firearms. But, you know, so our Wisconsin laws would have remained intact. So that is, you know, we always knew that. However, our primary concern was that if the federal law were to be found unconstitutional, it would be one less avenue to protecting survivors. And also, our primary concern actually was that it would open the door for more challenges to our gun laws. And we saw other states experiencing firearm surrender law state-level challenges, which meant that in many parts of those states, the state-level case was being cited as a reason to not enter orders to surrender weapons, even in civil proceedings where the burden of proof or like the preponderance of evidence is technically lower. So we're lucky in Wisconsin that we have those protections, but anything that happens federally, we've seen this all across different states where there will be, it kind of opens the door to further legal challenges.
Monique, you had mentioned the preponderance of domestic violence deaths in Wisconsin being related to guns. Also, the Educational Fund to Stop Gun Violence reports that women are 5 times more likely to be killed when their abuser has access to a gun. How effective are laws like these at protecting people from becoming victims of domestic violence?
I think they're very effective. It sets a parameter and some boundaries for victims and survivors. I also want to add, though, this is in our state, we still have this loophole that needs to be closed, because it supports people if they are a spouse, if they live in a home or live in a home together for a considerable amount of time, or have a child together. And so if it's a boyfriend, like teen dating violence, or even adults, it doesn't they kind of slip through the cracks. And so it's important, and I do believe there's more work to be done.
speaking of loopholes, another issue some people have been working on, and this came before the state Supreme Court, Jenna, a law related to disorderly conduct exceptions when it comes to gun restraining orders. In some cases, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, something that we would logically consider to be domestic violence, if someone makes a plea or is only charged with disorderly conduct, the restraining order gun law doesn't come into effect. Do I have that right?
You do, yes. That's the misdemeanor law. So again, yeah, closing those dangerous loopholes. We do have a dangerous loophole in the state that allows misdemeanor domestic violence offenders to own guns. So under federal law, but not state law, a person who's been convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence may not possess a firearm, which means that current state law allows those convicted of a misdemeanor crime involving domestic violence to own firearms. And last session, there was a bill that reorganized two statutes. And again, this is, it really comes down to technical language in the statute. But we introduced the bill last session. Unfortunately, it did not pass. And what that would do was reorganize two statutes, which is the crime of disorderly conduct and the definition of domestic abuse, so that individuals convicted of disorderly conduct with a domestic violence are prohibited from possessing a firearm. And unfortunately, that did not pass last session. But we do plan to introduce that again next session in January. But that is a dangerous loophole that is currently in effect in the state.
We're talking about last week's U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding a federal law that allows guns to be taken away from people who have restraining orders for domestic violence. Monique Minkins and Jenna Gormel are with us from End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Monique, for advocates like your organization, these laws aren't just about preventing fatalities, as I understand it. What role do firearms play in keeping victims of domestic violence in unsafe situations?
It goes without saying that it keeps victims and it keeps people safe. It's greater than, I think about how this is a community issue where domestic violence often spills into the streets as well. And so, for example, in the case that the Supreme Court decided upon, the gentleman forced his girlfriend into the car, and then he shot at a bystander. And so it's about the whole community and keeping the whole community safe. And this person had lots of touches with law enforcement. And so this is where we start talking about common sense gun laws. Where there are some people that just have no business having a gun because they have this history of doing harm or causing concerns in the community.
Jenna, can you talk about how a restraining order happens in the first place? How difficult is it for someone to get that restraining order in place and how that's enforced?
Yeah, absolutely. So luckily, we work with advocates all across the state in domestic violence organizations who can support survivors with accessing a domestic violence restraining order. It does require that you go to court. So you have to file paperwork. You have to go in front of a judge and potentially ask questions about your petition. You know, if a judge then grants you a final domestic abuse injunction, they have to order the abuser to hand over any firearms in their possession. And so there is a removal process that was established in 2014. But, you know, going to court, you're having to, you know, explain your story. You need to provide, there is a burden of proof, right? So you have to provide evidence. And you, when you go to court, you're in front of the abuser as well. So it can be a difficult process. And we always encourage survivors, if they are seeking this process, to definitely reach out to their local domestic violence programs. And we can see if we can get you some assistance, because just having someone there alongside you can be incredibly helpful.
Monique, in our last few moments, is there something that people you think misunderstand when it comes to the subject of domestic violence?
I think, and thinking about the gun laws, there's always that question of why doesn't the person leave? And most of the time, a person is in more danger when they leave. In this case, this woman was leaving. In the majority of our 2022 homicides, the person was leaving. And so it's greater than the physical harm. There are also the underlying pieces of equity and how people are treated when they go and receive a restraining order. Sometimes people from underrepresented populations don't have great experiences. It's about health equity. It's about economic equity, where lots of times people rely on their harm doers for financial support. And so there are the things that we see and that we know based on what you hear on TV and the news. And there are these underlying pieces that we can't ignore. And lots of times when systems work together and in tandem, you have better results. You have liberated people instead of these Band-Aids. And so that would be what I think is a misunderstanding or something that a connection that's not often made.
We'll leave it there. Monique, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jenna, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having us.
That was Monique Minkins and Jenna Gormel with End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. We talked about a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision upholding a federal law that prohibits gun ownership for people with a domestic violence restraining order against them.
Our June member drive is Thursday, and it's only one day long.
That means it's crunch time for a special challenge we have going. When 500 people donate before Thursday, a group of generous members will donate an extra $10,000 for WPR programs.
Make your gift to WPR early and help us meet that goal. Your donation helps fund Wisconsin Today and all the programs you rely on. So give now at WPR.org/donate. And thank you so much for your support.